Hello, I am Ibrahim Sharif from Manama, Bahrain, and I am a painter.
Hi, my name is Hisham Sharif. I'm a painter and I'm based in Bahrain.
I'm Michelle Schifaletti and you're listening to Thaqafat.
Hi everybody and welcome to a very special edition of Thaqafat today. Today we are sitting down with the father and son painting duo, Abdurrahim Sharif and his son, Hisham Sharif. Abdurrahim Sharif is one of Bahrain's foremost painters, whose paintings have expressed themes such as alienation, indifference, hardship, introversion, and emotional disconnection using vibrant colors. Abdurrahim was born in 1954 in Manama, Bahrain, and has also lived and studied in Paris and New York. He often creates an underlay of vivid hues that bleed through surfaces of muted and diluted natural tones. This technique creates an unstable undercurrent of color, form, and texture. His works have been exhibited all around the world, in the Middle East, Europe, Asia, and he has had solo exhibits in Bahrain, New York, Sydney, and Paris. Abdurrahim is a founding member of the Bahrain's Art Society and completed his Master's of Fine Arts in New York's Parsons School of Design. Abdurrahim's son, Hisham, is a painter in his own right. Hisham's work is guided by emotion and technique, and his paintings build a structure of space and time. He is constantly searching for the mood of the painting, whereas abstracted light reflects on inner emotion, the concrete light color remains a curtain of illusion. Hisham's work have been exhibited in the Bahrain 45th Annual Fine Art Show in 2019, for which he received the Recognition Award for Outstanding Work. Sharif's work is also part of the permanent collection of the Bahrain National Museum. Today, we're very lucky because we have a very, very special edition of Thaqafat. We are pleased to have Abdurrahim Sharif, who is a legendary Bahraini artist. And we are joined today by Hisham Sharif, who is an artist in his own right. And I'm pleased to have you both here today on Thaqafat. Abdurrahim, let's begin with you. So tell us a little bit about how you began in the arts field and your upbringing that brought you to this journey of this amazing career that you've had.
I must say I loved art since my childhood, as my father was very much into eating sweet and chocolate. And I was really very attached with them in the afternoon to go out with them. The end of the afternoon in a chocolate, a very famous chocolate biscuit place called Almina, where at that time all these nice sweets, chocolates were sold in tin boxes. And I was amazed with the painting on those pictures, on those boxes, not knowing who is who. So I used to, that was very much early age, 5-6 years old. And I used to copy those paintings, you know, once the chocolates were finished in the tins, I used to take the boxes and try to imitate these paintings, you know. And then when I got older, I realized they were for Degas and Renoir, you know, all the mostly impressionist. But, you know, painting with me starts from childhood. And as Bahrain was a British colony, there was always demand for pictures that depicting the Bahraini old market or the port, you know, the pier, mostly these issues, old streets, you know, old neighborhoods. And that time, you know, Bahrain had a lot. So I used to do a lot of watercolors and sell it mainly to British people who were here, very cheap at that time, at $3 and $4 a piece.
Hisham, how do you feel like growing up it was to live kind of with your father who had all of these artistic influences on you? How did that impact you growing up?
You know, I was born into this world of art. And but I remember when I was younger, you know, I didn't see much of my dad growing up because he would leave home at 4 a.m. to a studio and come back at 4 p.m., have his nap, spend some time with us, and, you know, and he would continue with his social life. But now, you know, I've been very fortunate to kind of grow up in this kind of environment. you get exposed to different schools of thought. It's not only art, but you know, philosophy always plays a role. Politics always also plays a role. I remember, you know, probably when I first started painting, I was maybe four or five years old, but there is a very strange backstory to it, which was you always tell me that I started painting after my accident in Iran.
Okay, number one, is this air condition working?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. He had a severe accident when he was 4 years old. He fell from two stories from a building while we were, you know, tourists in Iran. You can lose anything but your children. So I was there praying, asking God, you know, while we were, you know, he was in my arms, taking him to the closest hospital. And I was like, you know, asking God, you know, don't punish me by taking my child from me. And I since became a big believer. I think God responded to my prayers and wrote a new life for Hisham, and he woke up, and even though we had a lot of difficult time at the hospitals, the possibilities of the hospitals were very poor, and we couldn't take him out. And then, actually, I remember in my prayer, I was saying, God, if you want to take this boy, you know, give him some of my life, and take my life early. And, you know, we were all happy that he woke up, you know, and we came back home. And I saw Hisham spontaneously jumping on the big dining table in the kitchen, painting and drawing. And I still remember this day, you know, I came into the garage and, you know, he used to come in the house from the back door. And there was a sort of washing hanging on the washing line. And I thought, you know, that's washing of the day. And then when I went in the kitchen and started washing my hand, watching the washings, and actually it was colored paper that Hisham had painted and hanged them on the washing line.
Wow.
And I really thought at that time that somehow God responded to the prayer, and I could see that this boy was talented.
Yeah.
And this is how he started. I still remember him coming down from the school bus. You were what at that time, 6, 7 years old?
Yeah.
Pulling out a big canvas that he wanted to participate in a show with his colleagues in the school. I still remember him coming down and the canvas was so big and he was dragging it out of the bus, you know, but I keep all these beautiful memory, and I think, inshallah, this young artist is promising. I think he is promising.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you guys have both studied outside of Bahrain. I have heard, Abdurrahim, that you were very into jazz and you were in a band. And I know that there were some influences on music kind of in your work and living abroad. Can you share a little bit about that with the audience?
I lost my father at the age of 15. I could not continue painting. And, you know, I had to work and make my family living. So I had to quit painting somehow. And as I always had an accordion and a harmonica with me at home, I started to play music, because music, you could play it anytime. Because I'm very much attached to natural. Then we made a band, you know, it was the time Bahrain, few people started rock bands. And we were one of those early groups. We made a band called it, you know, we called our band Venus. Then, we used to play in weddings and birthdays and parties. Then I was not happy with our leader. He was not very much, practicing enough. So I left that band. I created another band called Lilies. And that band was much, poorer members. But we managed with our modest instruments to really do beautiful. We used to copy, you know, bands. We used to imitate them. And I remember when we used to play Santana, people used to think that it's the record playing. But on the other side, you know, I had this special feeling to jazz, to Louis Armstrong, you know, these jazz guys that were at certain stage, the reason, one of the reason of me, after I finished my education in Paris, was going to New York. During the 3 years that I didn't paint, I was still sketching. Mm-hmm. And I had a contractor job of PR and receiving VIPs in the airport. And I always had my sketching book with me. You know, I couldn't go more than sketches.
Yeah.
And one day I meet the number one of Total, Petroleum Total Company, French company, Monsieur Lartigue, who wanted to sit in the front. You know, I was like a driver. And he was looking at my sketching book. He said, can I look at your sketches? I said, sure. And he told me, why don't you go and study art? And I said, well, I love to, but I got family commitment. And going abroad costs a lot of money. He gave me his visiting card. He was based in Abu Dhabi at that time when Abu Dhabi was a desert,
yeah.
A real desert. And one building, and I remember one wimpy selling burgers. I don't know who was eating burgers in the middle of the desert. And he told me, if you decide to go to Paris and study art, come and see me in Abu Dhabi. And for me, that was the day. Within that time, the chargé d'affaires was establishing the French embassy in Paris, Monsieur Depisse. And I took my drawings to him and I said, I want to go to École des Beaux-Arts. And, you know, he took my file, my portfolio, and sent it to Paris. And they called me. They said, Mr. Sharif, you have been admitted at École des Beaux-Arts. I took the paper from the School of Beaux-Arts. You know, the Beaux-Arts is École Nationale Supérieure des Beaux-Arts. And went, took a flight to Abu Dhabi and showed my acceptance to Monsieur Lartigue. And he told me, he said, you want a coffee or a tea? I said, whatever comes. And he, at that time, you know, there was no internet and all that.
Yeah.
Sent the telex to Ministry of Foreign Affairs that Abdulrahim Sharif will come and, you know, give him a scholarship of Total Petroleum Company. He gave me the copy of the telex. I came to Bahrain, you know, made my handbag, handled a bit of business of cars that I had, rental cars and, you know, secondhand car business to my brother, and went to Paris to the address they gave me. And luckily, it turned out to be two scholarships waiting for me. One was arranged by the chargé d'affaires, Monsieur Depisse, and one by the petroleum company, Monsieur Lartigue, and they told me I have to make a choice. So, the French government scholarship was 100 francs less, but they would take in charge of everything, the fees, the school, medicals, everything. So I chose the French government. Thus, I was the first Middle Eastern to have a scholarship from the French government.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, talk about your experience then studying in Paris. And Hisham, I would love to hear kind of the parallel, how your experience was in New York. When you go outside of your home country, you live somewhere else, you study something else, how does that influence you as an artist and your works?
I studied finance. Yeah, I didn't go down the art route like my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because, you know, when I was a kid back in school, I had different goals in life, different aspirations of what I wanted to be. How I ended up in art is completely different. So when I graduated in 2015, I came back. I was struggling to find a job for a couple of years. Bear in mind, you know, the economy wasn't doing so well in the Gulf. We had the oil crash. And so nobody was hiring. You know, my dad encouraged me to go back into painting. And he was like, you know, you have two options. You can either sit at home, wait for a phone call, you know, or you could go back to the studio. So I opted to go back to the studio. And, you know, he's always been my school. So it's a very different kind.
Free College of Art.
Yeah. So he's always been my school. I'm very fortunate to be in that position. So yeah, ever since, you know, I started painting again, had my first show in 2017, and like the rest was history.
And then you did your residency in New York, which I know was interrupted slightly by the pandemic, but how did that kind of influence your work going and studying abroad, essentially? I mean, studying in the sense of doing a residency, experiencing a new place.
So prior to going to New York, you know, obviously I'd hear the stories from my dad when he was in Paris and New York. And, you know, I feel like I missed out so much on what I could have done. Because his stories that, you know, are, you know, so entertaining, you can listen to them endlessly. And, you know, prior to going to New York, you know, I'd always listen to my dad's experience and his thoughts, his opinions, you know, and, you know, in the past, I was, you know, probably questioning some stuff. I probably would assume, like, is my dad maybe too harsh or is he too strongly opinionated? Until I reached New York City and everything my dad had told me was right, was true. It was just a different ball game. Like, you really do see the shift when you go to New York City, or even if you're in Paris, for instance. It's just a completely different ball game. I was there for a month and a half, but I did certainly come back a different person, a different artist for sure. It was a great experience. My dad was absolutely right about New York in every sense.
You know, at least he had someone who described for him New York. But I must say, you know, when I finished my degree in Paris, how I went to New York. Number one, I was very much, you know, they're the French, they have what they call it Cinémathèque, which is a little movie cinema theater where you go and you see old films. And since those gangsters films, which later flourished in my portraits, you know, in Bahrain, when we were small, the Aramco TV used to put us at night, gangster films. I'm talking about Humphrey Bogart, James Cagney, and all that. And in Paris, there was an opportunity to see some of those films again. But what happened also, while I was trying to get some information on New York, I happened to meet in a summer, I used to live in International Cité des Arts in Paris, a residence and a studio that I had after I won the French award in drawing on all school of art in Paris, in France. So the award city of Paris gave me was a studio in Cité des Arts, where I met in the summer Robert De Niro Sr. with Lillian Bell. And Robert De Niro was visiting, was programmed to be visiting artists for Parsons School of Design. And Leland Bell was a teacher. So they lived in the same building, rented it for summer, a studio. And I met them, you know, I met them by chance and we spoke and they said, well, I said, I want to do a master's degree. And they told me what you are looking for, we have it in Parsons School of Design. So this is how it got connected. And I worked on all the official documents, take time with the French, with the American embassy. And then, you know, I got admitted at Parsons as well. I got my visa. And I remember on the 20th of August, 1979, I went to New York. Me also being interested at that time, and also in the abstract expressionists, it was for me very exciting to come to the city where all the art happened in America. Thus, things developed, you know, and by meeting people, I think what's great about New York is the people you meet. The people you meet, I mean, I'm not talking about the guy who ran after me in the subway with the meat cleaver. But usually, you know, at my time, Jean was telling me that when he went to New York, it was much safer than my time.
No, I mean, like for me, you know, last year going to New York was the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got accustomed to the art scene here at home, here in the Middle East. You know, I've become very familiar as well, you know, even when I was back in, you know, in school, seeing my dad, you know, go through it. I've always been my dad's right hand, so I've always been kind of involved indirectly. You have your own point of view of, you know, how arts is in the region.
Yeah.
And dad used to always tell me, well, the type of works you're doing, you know, trust me, when you get to New York City, you realize how good the work is.
Well, because of the sophisticated audience, that's what makes, you know, I was just, someone sent me a concert of John Williams, maestro, you know, maestro composing most important music of, you know, Hollywood masterpieces. And I was telling my wife, this is what makes America different. That when you go there, you live your time. And okay, even though, you know, I say that proudly, that I am probably the guy who really ignited art and contemporary art in Bahrain. But for people like me, we need more exposure with the Western world, frankly. On the basis of creativity, you know, and all that. But unfortunately now, one is the politics. The other thing is the pandemic. You know, it does, it's disturbing. It's disturbing.
Do you feel like there's a shift happening from, for example, when you began doing art in Bahrain and selling your pieces to the British visiting? Do you feel like there's been a change since then to kind of now in terms of the art scene in your country?
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you what, you know, I started selling my work very early. And then actually a part of the money I went to Paris was money saved from my childhood. Even though I had a scholarship, not much, at the, you know, from French government. But I must say the art moved much better than what we are doing now. The art that was practiced, I would say, until some 15, 20 years ago in Bahrain, was more for the love of creativity. And now you can't believe the number of artists that have increased in Bahrain and in the region. And I don't like to say that, but this is the truth. The aim is not creativity more than it's commercial. So I think if you ask me about the art in general in Bahrain, I'll tell you we were better. We were better. I really still owe a lot of things to my teacher in primary school and high school, because for me, they made me love art. Today, the generation, you can't believe the number who have increased in Bahrain, because they realize that you put some paint on the canvas, and if you have a good PR and you sell, then you are called artist. So we do have, frankly, I think, for me, in my opinion, the art is not improving in Bahrain. More than that, centralizing decisions. We don't have much of private galleries who work with local artists. We have the official government authority of culture, and we have the art society, and they don't go more than few exhibitions locally. You cannot also blame them, because the matter of going and joining art fairs and things like, okay, I was lucky, I sold to international collectors, but You need people to represent you today in art fairs.
Yeah.
And I do think that lacks in Bahrain.
You know, if I could add anything, I think from my dad's time up to today, there has been, of course, progress. But if I want to look at it from the last 5 years up to now, I think there has been kind of stagnation in the art scene, not only in Bahrain, but I would include the whole Gulf. Like, I'll just give you like a quick comparison. We went to Saudi, 2 years ago,
yeah,
to see a show, and you hardly see any paintings in Saudi today. It's, you know, filled with conceptual art, installations, etc. Last year, last November, I was actually in Dubai. You know, after coming back from New York and, you know, kind of figuring out what I have to do now with the pandemic, I did consider moving out to Dubai, you know, if I wanted to be within that art community. So I took a trip for a week to Dubai, visiting Sarkar, all the new institutions, foundations. Now, for a young artist whose main domain is painting, you know, you do get a bit demotivated when you get into Dubai. So when I was in Sarkar, you know, everybody was doing conceptual works, installation works. And there was probably one gallery who had a painting show on in the whole of Dubai.
Do you mind I say something? I think what Hisham also wants to say is this, that, okay, we come from a religion that God has opened us to other people and other culture. Luckily, I say luckily that there is this verses in the Quran that God didn't close the Muslim on their own thing. But what happened, I think in general, why I brought up the matter of creativity. In general, I think there is very much following whatever is done in the West. And what I want to say is not everything done in the West is a good example. Okay, there is no harm or getting influence or getting inspired. But, you know, we also have, I don't want to close it, that, you know, we have culture, we have history. You know, painting didn't start with the West. We have heritage of painting. But what happened is, for some reason, and also because of the easy social communication, I do think somehow that in general, we are running after the West.
Mm-hmm.
And I am at the, you know, one of the artists who says, well, there is no harm of being out of this artistic international community because the planet has got smaller, but you must have your own input.
Mm-hmm.
Something of you. This is why I tell him all of the time. I said, you know, there is no harm of loving and appraising Western art. But then you have to see where is your situation.
It's something that comes up a lot, I hear on the podcast, is people feel like there's an imitation rather than looking at something and creating something unique from it. I mean, I know that you also, Mr. Sharif, have a lot of the themes of kind of Gulf cities through a lot of your work. So how do you then integrate your own culture and your own surrounding and tradition and heritage into your works?
I said at the beginning, I belong to a religion and a culture that God didn't close us and he opened it. We constantly, both of us, discuss, you know, whatever comes out in the international notes. But if I want to locate my work, I like to be, before anything, a human being who lives in this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thus, I am not at all, you know, against whatever is done in the West. There's great things happening in the West. But what I'm saying is, the majority, a grand big majority of artists are looking to the West, okay? And I think, you know, through the different, let's call it stations, I went through, I'm still a painter, and I am a person who principally doesn't work with the Western thoughts in building an image. Okay, because I think, okay, in my background and in my heritage, deep, I am also Persian. And I have a history behind me, and I have painting behind me, and I have philosophy behind me. Okay, so this makes you create an image in different sense. But also, the complexity of the buildup is this, that with all the heritage of art internationally, you ask yourself, like, what my work is about. Because I always think about this matter of immortality in different kind of art and history. Mm-hmm. I like primitive paintings or drawings done by prehistoric man. I think they are beautiful drawings. Accidentally started with the print of the hand of the man in the cave. And then I come through the history. I like the Aboriginal art that happened in, you know, Australia.
Yeah.
Abstract art in America. And then there was always a reason behind why you like certain things and why certain things drop. I always tell Hisham, I said, the more you work and the more findings you do, you will start deleting some artists, and some other artists will become very important. Now, this is very, very, very dangerous at the same time. The great thing that you do it without thinking about it becomes that heritage of knowledge and experience become a part of you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my dad once told me something, and it was along the lines of, you know, sometimes the only family you have is the people that came before you in art. Because I was asked once in New York, you know, going back to the whole debate of the West, I had a meeting with a curator, and she looked at my works and asked me if I was influenced by the West. But she said it in a way that was... I thought wasn't fair to me. I told her, of course I'm influenced by the West, but so was Matisse influenced by the East. So was Van Gogh influenced by the East. Growing up now in my time, very different from my dad's, I'm sure you can relate to me. You know, culture right now, you know, I don't think you should put a border on it anymore. You know, life is so global. We all watch the same TV shows around the world. You know, I think this idea of heritage now also, you know, plays a role on every part of the continent. We all end up liking the same artists, all that kind of stuff. In the end, I think, you know, the type of work, regardless of where it comes from, if it's something very good, it will always stay with you. So,
you know, what I'm trying to say, I hope, Michelle, I'm being, clear on that. There is no reject for human experience. But then it is natural that when you develop something, you realize that, oh, that thing has got more content in the content than this.
Mm-hmm.
If you like, I can tell you, give you example. If we go to someone like Richard Diebenkorn, okay? Now, Diebenkorn, you cannot deny the Matisse's influence, okay? Especially the painting, Fenêtre sur Collioure, if you know the image, what I'm talking about, okay? And then, it relates directly to this sort of abstract minimalist of Diebenkorn, okay? Now, if you want to take this too much earlier, you will end up in Persian miniatures. Once you do a picture or a painting or any invention, it becomes a human heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But then talking about shuffling, I still admire more the tomato and knife and the scissors of Diebenkorn more than his abstract minimalist. There is always this mysterious question, why? And I think the great thing, going back to Diebernkorn, about his still lives of tomato and scissor and, you know, glass of water, that's the way it's done, which makes it art. You know, I think I agree with Francis Bacon when he says, actually, there is nothing called art. There is nothing called art. There is a confrontation with the mediums you are working with and how you are trying to find solution, and suddenly a complex moment happens between your technical capability, your heritage of thoughts and philosophy, all that gets to a seconds of thing, and something happened more than extraordinary. That's art.
Yeah, I think it's interesting also, Hisham, what you brought up about kind of, I guess, what will be called contemporary art. It's interesting because we're seeing a lot of commercialization of culture in the way it relates to art, which I have my own very strong opinions on. But I'm curious, kind of from your experience as a young artist, as an emerging artist, how do you see the opportunities for art regionally and internationally?
Like, going back to the visits I had last year in Dubai of like moving, and I was strongly considering, okay, should I join this community? Should I be in the Dubai? But it wasn't tempting. It wasn't motivating enough. You know, it's like, sometimes it does feel like whatever is happening in the Middle East is probably 20, 30 years behind the West. You know, like, I don't understand why many people here consider painting as dead. But when you look at the West, it's, you know, still, you know, being shown the most out of every medium, you know, in New York or whatever, except in Berlin. Now, you know, it's very hard. Like, it's very hard looking forward. Like, to sum it up from Dubai, I was like, you know, if I was going to move to Dubai, I might as well move to New York City and just be in the be in an environment where painting is still being appreciated, still being shown. So, you know, it's very hard to kind of answer that question, because it really depends on the people who run the galleries, run the institutions. You know, they have to kind of bring that medium back to play, I believe.
You know, maybe we say that because we are painters. The matter of creativity. Okay, there are a lot of artists who got into environmental art installation who are superb, and they really, they put this philosophical influence on. If we take people like, you know, I would talk about people who really went out of the tradition of canvas, even though I don't like to call it tradition, because it's really, as I said, it's the content.
Yeah.
Okay, not the physical thing. It's very important. People judge. I remember once I showed my picture. This, we were trying to see galleries in Paris, and I thought the guy was interesting because he was showing some big exhibitions of semi-figurative things. And he asked us, he thought we are customers. I told him, no, we are not customers. We are artists, you know. So, you know, I showed him some of my work on Instagram. And he said, oh, is it figurative? You know, like figurative, like, oh, it's done. And I said, well, you know, wait a minute. It's not done the way, it's done different way.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I will talk, you know, talking about, to put myself on ourselves maybe, clear about creativity. There is no limit of the medium. Richard Serra, which I know, you know, personally, has, with all these steel walls, is creating another world. I went to a gallery in Paris where there was painting for Anish Kapoor. And I told the guy, tell him not to paint, it's not his business. Because after, you know, the water turning, in River of Sin, the project he made.
Yeah.
Here are people who went out of canvas, but did something that I always this immortality is something that remains in your mind. You will never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you go to other art fairs and you saw, you see kind of installations and you say, my God, you know, I think it's just because it's an easy way of doing something.
Now, although I'm a painter and you were talking about the whole debate about painting in the Middle East,
yeah.
Ask me what are my favorite works of the 21st century has nothing to do with painting. I'll put, you know, Arthur Jaffa's video, Love is the Message and the Message is Death, as probably one of the best artworks of the 21st century. Oliver Edison's Weather Project at the Tate. I think those two, you know, stand out.
Impressive, huh? They do impressive work.
It's, you know, sometimes it is incredible. You know, it's, you know, in art, there's subject matter and there's content that comes behind it. And they elevate it to a completely different world.
In another way, we come back that those who are after conceptual art, you know, there is nothing against that.
Yeah.
I think a matter of creativity
is
very important. You know, and the immortality is very important. I think John Genet was a friend of Jay Comity, talking about Jay Comity. He said, immortality is the possibility of art to live. If you want to compare these people who do this crazy, like, let's talk about Schnabel. He's doing this crazy painting with putting his cloth in paint and dropping it on the can. And then someone like Jay Comity, he comes and sits, he makes his small head and keeps on cleaning and doing and doing. You know, at the end, there is an image that you see it once and you don't want to see more of it.
Yeah.
And there is an image that I will talk the positive things. No matter how many portraits you see by Jay Comity, you then get bored of it. While some other artists, it's enough to see one painting. I don't need to see the rest. Because, and now I don't want to go on the other side that museums and galleries also, beside the good thing they made a big mess in art.
Yeah.
Of wanting examples.
I think the best way to put it, I think these great works of art always have this ambiguity to it. They're always open. When you come and see them the first time, it's very different when you see them the fourth, fifth time.
You grow.
Yeah, and
you grow with it.
I think, and the mistake I think a lot of young artists do is closing that idea of what the work could be, having an artistic statement, and you know, it's black and white, there's no gray, this is what I do, you know? Great works of art have to have ambiguity to them. The viewer will connect to it in their own personal way. You know, that's my kind of analysis now when I, you know, after, you know, learning so much from my dad, seeing art, you know, for so long, I always want that element in the work.
There's a lot we covered, but I do want to briefly get to some of your pieces of work. I would love to talk just very briefly about kind of your exploration of color and hues that you use across your works and kind of how you use color as an expression throughout various works that you've produced.
You know, your eyes is oriented to Hisham.
I think that goes for both of you, actually, because I think both of your works have this commonality of an expression of, I don't want to say expression, but some type of relationship to color and hues.
I think what makes me excited about my own work, which I do, frankly, especially when the paintings come to a point where it says, don't touch me anymore. That's the moment I'm waiting when I work. I keep on demolishing, rebuilding. Sometimes a painting, you know, Hisham sometimes works in my studio. The worst thing is for me to get a compliment if the work is not finished. Mm-hmm. If someone walks in my studio and says, oh, I love that painting, and that painting is not finished, I'll tell you what, 100% is going to be demolished after the person leaves. Okay? So, how I do this coloring? I believe with my, with the time I painted, see, you find yourself through the painting. That I paint to bring the picture to the stage where it selects its own mood and its own color. Now, when I tell people, I remember in 19, when I came first time from Paris to Bahrain, and we had a gathering with fellow artists. Some of them are dead, unfortunately, now. And I remember one night, while we were sitting together, I was telling them, the most intelligent painting is the most stupid one. And everybody came up against me and said, how come you are a graduate of Paris? At that time, I was just in Paris. How come you study in the most famous school of art in the world? You make such a declaration that the most important art is the most stupid. I tell them, well, you know why? Because when you think you are so limited, the proof is history. I said, you drive a car, right? 5 years ago, was it the same design? No. Human brain is so limited. I always tell Hisham, try to get to a point where the painting paints itself. Become a tool for the painting. And this is very, everybody who hears this say, oh no, how can you implement this? I said, I tried to be in the mood of the picture painting itself. You will tell yourself when the work is really tells you, leave me now. How did I put this paint? How did I put this color together? And that's art. You know, I think there is another thing, Michelle, is I always tell Hisham these things. You know, I tell them what's very important, what makes an artwork from illustration is the content. If you look at a painting, Michelle, think of what I'm saying. Try to, while I'm talking to you, to see images, okay? If you look at a painting and it doesn't take you more out than that painting, no matter it's upside down or not, it's illustration. You know, I still remember this guy who was in Parsons, friend of mine, Brian. He was in illustration department. He used to draw so good. And he used to come and see my oil on paper. I did a lot of oil on paper. He said, Rahim, how do you do that? I said, Brian, come on, you have such a strong drawing. Your draftsmanship is so good. He said, yeah, but for me, that's only illustration. It doesn't go more. And I think what Brian was trying to say is, if you look, Michelle, to a painting, the content, no matter what is it, a dot of color, a slash of color, a line with the brush, okay? But that content makes you travel through, gives your imagination. Remember, when we dream, your soul leaves your body and it takes the freedom to fly, okay? It does things that you cannot do when you are awake.
Yeah.
The content, we come back. If it frees your spirit to no matter what page in the notebook of your memory can be, and all it carries you to an imaginary fiction images, that's art.
Hisham, what do you think about that?
This is the thing, like growing up, you know, these were the principles and values like I grew up with, you know? And you knew you were on the, you know, I knew I was doing something well when I got to New York. Because when everybody saw the works, they're like, oh, wow, you do this type of work, wow. You know, it was very, you know, it got the right feedback you know, which what my dad was telling me prior to going. And, you know, and then, you know, you spend your own time developing as an artist, reading and learning. You know, I think, you know, every young artist, you know, has to look back at what has happened to know what they're doing today. Yeah, I am, you know, the son of my, you know, the son of Rahim Sharif.
I think Hisham, I tell him, maybe because of the experience and the age, I can travel with Hisham's images and die.
Yeah.
I can tell Hisham, I said, you do a kind of painting which the subject matter is an excuse, but you can do the same image for the rest of your life. Why? Because of what you do, not how you do. It took time to come to these conclusions. You know, now I don't know it's a good conclusion or a bad conclusion, but it's ignite my motor. It makes me work. It makes me, you know, I sleep very badly. I am at 4 o'clock in the morning in the studio and paint, because with time, there is a language you build. It's, most of the time it's depressing because, you know, it doesn't come the way you think it can. Right now, before Hisham puts us on air, for a few minutes, I thought that maybe, you know, this interview at 6:30.
Yeah.
While I went to the studio, there was a sort of painting I left. I was sad about this afternoon. And then it was in my mind, you know, what was wrong? And then while I was sitting with my wife having a tea, I said, you know what? I have to go and jeopardize something. So I went and put paint, and black brush, and I go blum, 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 blum. It didn't take more than 2 minutes. I said, wow, the painting made it jump.
It consumes you. The work consumes you.
Yeah, you know.
You always have to, you know, you always have to fall into the demand what the painting wants.
Yeah. Hisham, obviously you probably know your father's works maybe more than anyone else. I personally love the artist and his model, but I'm curious if you have a favorite piece of work from your father and what that would be, or perhaps more than one. One that really speaks to you.
So I always like joke with my dad. Sometimes, you know, people come over to the studio, I take a drag him to the side, and I'm like, oh, no, keep this for me, keep this for me, for my own collection. No, there are. I don't have one particular.
Yeah.
The artist and the model, I was too young to see that. I never saw that in person. And when I knew it was in UAE, I always told my dad, oh, can we try to get that back and, you know, do something, you know. It's one of my favorite works, yes. But it's very hard to pick. I can't pick one, you know. God forbid if the house is, you know, is on fire, I'm not going to pick one painting. I'll just stay with the, you know, go down with everybody. So if I had to pick one, it's probably one, the drawing when you were 20. The one that's hanging in the living room.
Me with the mirror?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's my...
Don't remind me these days. You know, you know, even the, that one, the drawing, which got the award of all school of arts in France,
mm-hmm.
I got stabbed 3 times by a jealous French student, okay? That drawing is me being frightened from my own image. I had a tiny room on the roof. You know, mostly the students, they get the servant's room on the top 8th floor, no elevators, nothing.
Yeah.
And there was one large piece of mirror in our studio, which the professor Marcel Gilly fixed on the wall in order to give more depth in our class. There was one large piece of mirror that I, you know, he agreed to give it to me. And I brought it home and fixed it. And it was in front of my bed. Every morning I go, when I go to my small room, I see myself. Yeah. And that drawing, that thing developed with me. It's like me frightened from my image and me frightening my image, you know?
Yeah. If you had if you look at all of your works, I mean, a lot of your works that are more pro, like profiles, like Jazz Player or the Cigar Man, the Cigar Smoker, all of these profiles, if you look at all of your works as a whole, if somebody said, I want to buy all of your works but one, what would be the one painting you would never, is the most dear to you, that you could never let go of?
I'd like to buy back all my artwork. I like to buy all my artwork.
Because you want it back for your own archive, or because?
It's my life. It's my life.
Yeah.
But people don't know, when they buy a work of art from an artist,
mm-hmm.
they think, oh, he can do another one. Yeah. Or, especially, it's not my case, you know? I am not a person who does two paintings the same.
Yeah.
I did a lot of these gangster cigar smokers, but I proudly say every one of them has got its own flavor. At the end, people really, I think those who can afford to buy art, they really should put in their mind that they bought a piece of life of the artist.
Yeah.
That's why when you ask me what's my favorite piece, it's so hard to pick because we live in the same house. I see him every day. I'm always in a studio. I see new works coming out. They're all important to me.
I'm thinking of, you know, I want to make a mini museum.
You have such an amazing archive and you've influenced the art field so much, particularly in your region, that for people to be able to go and experience your life through your works, I think it's so profound and interesting and important.
We always have this debate, you know, because I'd love for him to do the museum.
Yeah.
You know, looking at Bahrain, we don't really have any arts institutions to go visit. There's many things to go see on a daily basis. I'd like to look at it as, you know, our, you know, giving back to the art scene in Bahrain.
Finally, we'll do it because I like to see myself sitting with my artwork around me.
And your life story, like you said, your life story in front of you.
Yeah, you know, frankly, I sold the painting in 2005 on a guy in Paris. The Minister of Culture wanted to score a show in Paris for one night. It was on the occasion of the National Day of Bahrain. So she told me, I want a show for just the reception time. Someone came, a designer who knew me, he said, I want this portrait. And I told him, okay. I sold him, and he was so happy. I told him, come and pick it up after the 11 o'clock at night, come and take it. And then a few years after, I think the guy had problems. He got broke and he wanted to sell the painting. Hisham didn't see that painting originally, but he saw it on photograph. And he said, Baba, where is this work? And I told him, it's in Paris. The guy wanted to sell it and he offered me almost the double price I sold it to him. At that time, exactly the same day, I sold a large painting in Kuwait. So I said, I'll take the money from here and put it there.
Yeah.
But the painting was an early portrait. I wanted it.
Yeah.
It is a film. Hollywood can make a film. How we went and brought that painting after several strikes in Paris and failures to send the painting back to Bahrain.
Yeah, because the guy disappeared for 2 years. And like, I thought, oh, okay, like there goes the money. I'm not gonna see the.
Yeah, I trusted the guy so much when he said he wants 20,000 euro for it. I said, here is the 20, with no confidence, no documents, nothing.
Yeah.
And that is for 2 years.
But you got it.
After 2 years.
After 2 years, I told Jean, you know what? I'm disappointed that all this friendship.
But then we found out.
Poor guy had problems with tax and he wanted to send the painting. He couldn't. I think he was broke.
Yeah.
Me and Hisham, we went to Paris to bring the painting back to Bahrain. You can't believe it when you say, a piece of my life came back.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed the conversation today. I think this is, it's great to hear about your life to hear about the amazing future that Hisham has, and just the relationship you two have is so beautiful. So I appreciate the time. And I have one last question that I always ask everyone on this podcast. That is, we spoke a bit about what culture and heritage, and I just want to know what culture means to the both of you.
I'll tell you, what is culture for me? It's something you inherit, mostly positive. But then the bad experience comes also with culture. Culture is something you inherit from an act that is done, whether you practice it on high scale or low scale. Today, there are new generation who try to really disconnect themselves from culture to make themselves new person. There is a tendency in Bahrain in that people don't want to know about past. And I think culture is very important because you frankly evaluate humanities that were before you. You see, if you want people one day to respect you and think of you, then you have to think and respect the others and this people in history that left this thing for you to become today the simple vocabulary we are talking about is a culture.
I think he summed it up perfectly well. Along the lines of what I had in mind.
See.
It's like, you know, it's not necessarily close to one space. You know, culture can be in terms of food, art. Mm-hmm. It's open to everything, even outside, you know, domains outside of what we would think culture is.
Yeah.
It's part of civilization.
It's the life of others. You see, the same thing I tell you. This painting is our life. The putting on a scale and evaluating the lives of others.
Abdurrahim and Hisham, thank you so much for your time today. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Hope if you pass in this area, you know, come and visit us. You're always welcome.
Thank you everyone for tuning into this very special edition. I hope that everyone enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it. For me, it was great because I felt like when I was recording it, I was really creating some type of an archive. And so I hope you all felt that when you listened. If you'd like to stay up to date on the works of Abdurrahim and Hisham, you can follow them both on Instagram at @RahimSharif_ and @HishamSharif_. And hopefully we'll be hearing more about the upcoming works that they're doing and the potential museum that Abdurrahim is planning to make in Bahrain. And make sure you subscribe to Thaqafat to stay updated. And until next time, when we continue to connect to the culture, Ma'a Salamah.